Hello, my babies, and welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy Joe Stapleton. He's my work wife, James Hardigan.
Happy Chardonnay Day, Joe. Who doesn't love a good glass of Chardonnay?
Especially a wife. If you're going to be my work wife, that's a perfect work wife drink.
Yes, agreed.
Coming up on today's show, it's our WSOP preview show. How are we back here again already?
I know, a full year. I mean, that said, the World Series of Poker does occupy a decent chunk of that year.
That's true.
A long-ass festival. But yeah, here we go, previewing what poker players are going to be doing over the summer months.
That's right. Of course, we'd like to pretend the WSOP doesn't exist, but it's still the most important time of the year for poker players for now. And we'd be idiots if we did not acknowledge it. So what better way to do that than to have the reigning WSOP main event champion, Daniel Weinmann, on the show today. We are going to talk to Daniel about his win, of course, what life has been like for the past year, and about what I think is a really cool side project he has been working on in the meantime. Of course, we've still got our little old online series, the Spring Championship of Online Poker, still plugging away. And the handsomest boy in all of poker, Howard Swains, will be here once again to update us on all the jaw-dropping facts and figures. And, of course, there was a new episode of The Big Game to recap. We're going to hear your thoughts on the TV show We Made. And this week's superfan is Mickey Heisen, and he has challenged me to trivia on the subject of barbershop quartets.
I have absolutely no idea why he has picked this subject. I assume he's an expert.
Got to be an expert if he picked this. Now, this did give me an idea for future superfan subjects.
Okay.
What if we did where neither me nor the superfan knows what the subject's going to be, Patrick picks the subject, and we both have the luck of the draw if it's something we know about or don't know about? Jungle cats. I don't know why I immediately went to the rainforest again. China. Who knows? And that way, no one can study. Nobody has to watch a whole movie.
I would say, if you're applying to come on Superfan versus Stapes, if you're going to throw your hat into the ring via the Superfan applications channel on the PokerStars Discord server, if you don't have a specialist subject picked out, if you are happy for us to choose, if you're happy to go with the luck of the draw, why not? Why not?
That sounds kind of fun to me, because look, I know nothing about barbershop quartets, and I like that because there's not a lot of pressure on me going into it. So, just a thought for the future, maybe just luck of the draw. Do you remember during the 2016 American election when Trump was like, Russia, if you're listening, remember that?
Yes.
And he was like, so remember when I did that last week with tournament director?
Oh, yeah, when I was complaining about that ruling at the Commerce, and you said, I know that TDs listen to this show, so reach out to me if you have a view on this.
Yes, so a very well-respected TD reached out and had this to say. They did ask to remain anonymous, but yes, bad ruling. Expose the card and use as a burn card, then change the deck at end of hand.
I think we're all agreed now, right?
Yes,
we're pretty much aligned before. This is just kind of
this
the literal
seals the
icing
deal.
Plus, on the cake.
Look, I just like it's kind of a flex for me to have world-famous tournament directors just answering. If you're listening, tournament directors. Okay, let's see. Friday night, did the big game actually air, or was it more car crashes?
I think it was pushed back yet again due to weather delays, which impacted on NASCAR, which then impacted on the rerun of episode one and the premiere of episode two. I think it's fair to say that most people are probably watching it on the PokerStars YouTube channels. A reminder for those of you in the UK that there is a separate YouTube channel. And I think there were really three story points to this show. We saw Nikki continue to do well and continue to make a profit, which is crucial as the loose cannon because you only keep the money that you actually make above your starting stack. Phil Hellmuth woke up. Phil Hellmuth came alive after being teased by the rest of the table in episode one that he wasn't playing any hands. He played several hands and he is now profitable in the game. Last but by no means least, we have Arden, who got stacked at the end of episode one, and history repeated itself. The final hand of the session, the final hand of the show, Arden got stacked again.
Yes. So, and I did have an interesting exchange with Arden on Twitter via Twitter DMC. I'm sure Arden remembers the overall story arc of what happened here across the one day of filming, aka five episodes. But I'm not sure she knew, you know, how they were going to air. So, or at least remembered that I was at the end of each episode. So Arden DM'd me and she said, I got crushed on Hustler 2. Because she was playing on the Hustler stream as this was airing.
I saw a headline on Poker News that there were like five hands in a row and four of them were all ins that she lost. Like she literally got stacked four out of five hands.
Exactly. So she wrote, I'm the biggest fish in every game! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. And so I'm trying to make her feel better. So I write back, what's truly impressive is that you still are not even the least bit snake bit. You just keep coming back for more. An astounding feat. To which she replies, bah ha 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 ha, for me or for more. And I'm like, wait, what? And then I go back and read my message. I didn't write, you just keep coming back for more. I wrote, you just keep coming back for me.
Hold on a second. Did you write that? Or was it a classic autocorrect? Tim Apple?
I don't know. I think it was me. I think I just accidentally wrote, you keep coming back for me. And then I just wrote, whoops. Damn it. That was supposed to go in my Airbender fan fiction. And then she never replied again after that. So I think me and Arden are cool. But perfectly honest, look, I'm not a single man, but if I had written, you just keep coming back for me, and Arden decided to be like, hey, what did you mean by that? It would have given me a little ego boost. She didn't, but fine, whatever.
So we asked our lovely listeners to comment on this show, to provide their own reviews via the podcast discussion channel on the PokerStars Discord server, link in the podcast description. And I did throw out the classic bribe that the best review would win a prize, which prompted Minuscula to write, commentary is a W, especially from this Stapes guy, clutches when the table talk isn't there, because I did say that you would pick the winner. But obviously, you're not that shallow. You're not that shallow. So
well,
Minuscula,
I got to hear the other choices first, at least.
Okay, okay.
So far, they are the front runner.
Andy, you've won enough, but thank you for commenting. Episode 2, even better than episode 1. There's just something about the table trying to get a rise out of Phil that ticks boxes for me. Something that John Late picked up on as well. Different animal to episode 1, but still really enjoyable, and dare I say, eye-opening. Keating, definitely a glitch in the Matrix. Would love to go up against him, but a whole table of no gracias. Seeing a different side to Phil Hellmuth, which is brilliant and disappointing all at the same time. I think he may be morphing into Jeff Goldblum. Three more episodes to see the full transformation.
I mean, that's a review. That is a that's like a review that hit on many aspects. Isn't just trying to kiss butt. Shows that they had a deep understanding of what was happening at the table during that episode. John Late, congratulations. You're our winning review this week.
Well, hold on a second. You might want to change your opinion because Reese also chimes in. Big game episode 2. Nikki Limo continuing to show why she was an obvious pick for Loose Cannon. Great read on Phil. He is one of the goats. Think Arden is a touch out of her depth in this game, sadly. Burning through that Team Wolf money like it's Game of Thrones money, but really enjoying it. Watching the legends never gets boring.
Oh, that one was good too.
I tell you what, if you want, Joe, I will allow you to award two prizes.
Really? All right. There you go. Reese and John Late, you each get a prize. Congratulations. Sorry if you're 50% of the people that didn't get a prize, but do better.
Yes. Not saying we'll run the same competition next week, but maybe. The prize, by the way, and I'll get Patrick to sort it out, so you'll get a DM from StatTrek via Discord, is the exclusive Poker in the Year's deck of playing cards, because I happen to be in the London office today, Joe, and I found there's still a box of these packs of cards. I took 20 of them home with me because I am going to take 20 decks of these cards to Malaga, because I have encountered, shall we say, some resistance to our mantra that everyone loves a chop pot. So I very much want to preach that everyone genuinely does. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play a number of tournaments at the ESPT slash UKIPT event in Malaga next month. And If there is a chop pot at my table in any of the tournaments I'm playing, I will give anyone involved in that chop pot a free deck of Poker in the Ears playing cards to prove that everyone loves a chop pot.
That is, I mean, that's double the prizes. That's at least two decks of cards for every chop pot, maybe
now,
more.
Again, I would like to highlight, I am taking 20 decks with me. So that means, realistically, I can compensate for 10 chop pots, assuming that they're heads-up pots. Mm. So once I'm out of cards, I'm out of cards. But I have to say, we'd be running weirdly above expectation if we had that many chop pots. I don't play that much poker. So the first few times it happens, I can guarantee that if there's a chop pot at my table, I will distribute free decks of cards. And look, if this is a popular gimmick, if people like this, maybe I'll make a thing of it wherever I play poker.
I mean, look, we'll get to that in a minute, but you've been running deep in a lot of shit lately, so there's a chance you're going to need lots of decks of cards.
Live only. Live only. so yes, I will be playing live poker at the UKIPT/Australia's event in Malaga in June. But before Spain, there's Vegas. Because the World Series of Poker starts next Tuesday, May 28th. And it runs until Wednesday, July the 17th.
Wow.
Joe, that's almost two full months.
Okay, so it's not even a year from the end of the last festival before the beginning of the next one. Okay, I don't quite feel as bad about that.
No, more like 10 months. During that period, there are nearly 100 bracelet events. Back once again, I think this is the third year running, it's been at the Horseshoe/Paris, which, by the way, I thought was a great venue, worked really well last year, and is a significant upgrade on the Rio in every single way. And being on the Strip just makes all the difference.
I don't know, man. I'm not going to say anything bad about it, but I don't know. I did like the Rio. I'm sure I'm in the minority. It doesn't have to be a thing. We don't have to argue about it. But
okay. What you can't argue with, Joe, was the popularity of last year's WSOP.
Of course, yes.
The numbers were absolutely huge last year. I do not expect the WSOP to be any less popular this year. And I'm going to be there for the opening weekend. So wow. I say that it starts on the Tuesday. I'll be there from Friday, May 31st through to the 3rd of June. So really playing June 1st, June 2nd. And to be honest with you, we'll probably just play the daily deep stacks because I don't think there are any bracelet events that really accommodate my schedule and bankroll. So on this occasion, maybe a couple of dailies, but also just to take in the atmosphere and say hello to people.
Do you have any flexibility? Like if you decided to flick it in on the 1st and you went deep in something, could you stick around longer?
I could, but again, looking at the schedule, there's nothing that I'm really itching to play. And there are a couple of bracelet events at the end, which I'll come to in a moment, which I will be playing. So on this occasion, it'll probably just be the deep stacks. Now, you've got your big comedy trip across America. You're going to be in Vegas in early July for the start of the main event. So while you're there playing anything?
I kind of was like, okay, leaving the door open, like if things went really well on the comedy tour, or like if I got to Vegas and, you know, I decided to sell a bunch of action that I could like hop in the main. But I think that we're going to be working really early into the main event. I don't think that I could even, you know, there's something along the lines of like if you, you know, if you had to work, let's say on like day 10 of the main event, you could probably schedule that and then all of a sudden be like, uh-oh,
yeah,
I made it to day 8. Like maybe let's make some other plans. But I think that we're scheduled to work on like day 2 or day 3 of the main event. So I don't think I'm going to play anything. I think I'm just going to bask in the glory of doing just okay, shooting my comedy special. July 5th, by the way, tickets on sale now. If you're in Vegas during the main event, we're going to be shooting the finale of that road trip tour, my special. I don't like using the term special, but at least makes sense to people. And that's going to be on Friday night, July 5th. So hopefully I'll see a bunch of you there. No events for me, I don't think, though.
Okay, well, I'm going to be back in Vegas for the last weekend of the series. So I'm literally there at the beginning and right there at the very end. So the weekend of the 13th, 14th of July, there's the Lucky Sevens. This is the $777 seven-handed event. So I'm going to play that. And might play the closer as well, which is a $1,500 buy-in, no limit hold'em event. So those are the two bracelet events that I've got penciled. Just to clarify, the reason I'm not playing the main event this year and the reason why, sadly, I can't attend your comedy show, Joe, is I'm going on a cruise. Don't laugh at me. I'm getting old.
Can you tell us what kind of cruise?
It's a cruise to Iceland and then across the top of the United Kingdom.
Well, those are supposed to be lovely, James.
I'll be honest with you. I'm actually really looking forward to it. And look, the main event's going to happen every year. This is saving me $10,000. Now, last year, of course, the World Series of Poker main event was the biggest ever with more than 10,000 unique entries. We both played that. And Joe, we have the medals to prove it. I kind of feel they should have put inside, I paid $10,000 and all I got was this lousy medal. But
I mean, they're going to need probably another medal this year and another medal the year after that. I would be very surprised if it didn't grow year on year by some, you know, at least small number. It was just so popular last year. I don't see it having fewer than 10,000 players again for a long time.
Yeah.
So whatever. I ended up getting my little medallion. I think I told everyone Kev Math sent it to me. By the way, let's send some positive vibes out Kev Math's way. He's going to miss the start of the series.
100%.
He's having some health problems. So Kev Math, you will be sorely, sorely missed. But yeah, we didn't win. We did not win the main event, did we, James?
No, because there was a different player who walked away with significantly more than a memento in a box. $12.1 million to be precise. He is the reigning world champion of No Limit Hold'em. Daniel Wyman, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. You know, I've listened to a bunch of episodes and, you know, never been in a position to really, you know, be on a podcast. But, you know, winning the main event will change some things.
Yeah, I guess that's a good place to start. How much has changed and how much has sort of reverted back in the last year?
It's interesting now. You know, we're almost like 10 months removed now. We're coming up on next year's World Series of Poker, recording this. And, you know, I don't know if it's because I was kind of on my way out of poker in a way when I won, but my life hasn't changed very much. My focus has really still remained on, you know, my startup that I'm working for, playing a lot of golf, spending a lot of time with my fiance, and poker was already taking a kind of diminishing role in my life, and it's kind of continued on that trajectory.
Were you in a position to be like retiring before this happened, or you were just transitioning out of poker?
I wouldn't say retiring. You know, I had had a very good career before. I had, you know, won a few titles. I had done well. I mean, I had been a pro poker player for about 15 years. But I was burnt out. I think it's the thing that happens to a lot of players that have been doing it this long. A lot of people say, you know, the goal of poker is eventually get out of poker. And, you know, I kind of was in that position.
But if you're going to play one last game, if you're going to go out on a high, this is the one to play, right? The biggest main event ever?
Yeah, it was very cool. You know, I've played 16 main events now and 15 before this, never had much luck. It only really had one cash. But to go on and win this, it's just, you know, it's a dream come true.
It's really funny. So I found this tweet of yours from 2022, and you probably know it because I think it's kind of famous, where you say, most fun I've ever had playing poker. Ivy stared me down. Negrano made me feel very unsafe and got to do battle against the best in the world for 4 days. No regrets. Played my heart out. Watch out. I'm coming. Yeah. Pretty wild.
Preemptive.
That was like with a ninth place finish, right? So what's the story behind that?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I think, right after I busted the 50K Poker Players Championship in 2022. Yeah. And, you know, coming up in poker and like the moneymaker era, these are the guys I saw forever. And it's like, how cool would it be to ever get to play with these guys? You know, so kind of the journey of going from No Limit Hold'em to learning all these mixed games, eventually feeling like I'm good enough to compete in this 50K, which I still think is the most prestigious tournament, you know, making it deep, playing all day with Ivy, you know, just kind of shooting the shit with him for, you know, 6 hours on day one and, you know, feeling like you're almost in that poker inner circle while you're playing that tournament. I still just think that was the most fun I've ever had playing poker.
You referenced Moneymaker, who, of course, changed the game forever and very different circumstances at a very different time. But as the main event champion, he was doing the talk show circuit. He became a bona fide celebrity. What kind of attention did you get? How much fanfare did you feel there was around your win? Does it go beyond poker at all anywhere in America?
It really doesn't. It was kind of interesting. We stayed in Vegas for a few days after, and it felt like, you know, it felt like I was an instant celebrity in Vegas.
Right.
We were staying at the Horseshoe, so naturally everybody there kind of knew the buzz was there. But the second we got on a plane back home to Atlanta, I was just back to being myself again. You know, I was a couple people knew at the golf club, but there hasn't been a single moment in a year where someone at a grocery store has been like, oh, hey, you're the poker guy. So I don't know if that's a factor of, I don't think poker is necessarily on the decline, but especially with online sites not being in the US, it's just, yeah, you know, you don't have as much coverage, not as much fanfare.
I know that if I had won the main event and I didn't end up on Letterman, I'd have been really disappointed about it. And I know that hasn't happened in a long time. Do you care about that kind of stuff?
I don't. I've never been one to promote myself, really. You know, I'm not super active on social media. I know, you know, a lot of people would take this and try to make it, you know, how can I make as much money as possible off of this? And, you know, that was never my goal. I mean, it's an incredible honor to win this tournament. I know I'm part of this elite group, but for there, it's kind of ended there for me. You know, if anybody out there wants me to slap on a patch and pay me a bunch of money, I'm not going to say no, but I'm not going to be out there, you know, trying to, you know, fight for that too much.
I mean, every now and then the subject of the November 9 gets brought up, and that concept, and whether it was good for poker or bad for poker, looking at it purely through a selfish lens, would you have preferred to have taken that 3-month break, or are you happy that you just got to play it out with one rest day and just have it be done?
I'm super happy we just played it. I don't remember the last time they did the November 9. I know in 2013, I had a good friend, Jake Balsiger. He got third. So I was part of like his training for 3 months. We ran through every situation. And that was 11 years ago when poker tools were so far behind where they are today. So I think if you give, you know, 9 pretty smart people that all have this kind of newly found wealth and wealth creation opportunity to the chance, you know, to study their ass off for 3 months, it's just a totally different game. You're going to come back and have 9 completely different people. You know, I think we had an interesting mix of people at this final table this year.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm glad that no one really got to change who they were.
Speaking of your sort of background in being, you know, a very good poker player, poker coach, you're not an unknown person to people who know poker very well, right? You might not have been a household name. And last year, Espen was kind of the same thing, right? The year before that. And so do you think that we're now in an era where it's going to be very difficult to have another amateur champion, and we're just going to have a lot of people like you who are constantly in the mix?
I think 100%. You know, back when I got into the game, you know, I'll never forget, you know, the World Series would come on and they would like have this shot on this guy with a hat on that said, WSOP, anyone can win. And that doesn't feel true in the main event anymore. You know, most of the side events are 2-day, 3-day events, pretty turbo structures. And yeah, pro players are going to have the best shot at winning, but you're always going to have enough amateurs in that field and enough variance that's where you get kind of the complete unknowns that win bracelets. But the main event being 10 plus days of play now, 12 hours a day with the structure so good, I think it's impossible that, you know, any amateur can really ever win again.
Yeah, it seems very unlikely to me.
How did you pace yourself over that period of time? I mean, it's a long tournament.
It's difficult, you know, especially being from the East Coast and not having spent the whole summer out there. I wake up early on the East Coast, so that's just amplified being 3 hours before on the West. So every morning of the main event, I was up at 6 a.m. And I've got, you know, you don't start playing until noon. So it's like, how do I fill these 6 hours? You know, once we're playing, it's something I've done for 20 years. I'll feel comfortable there. But just the waiting around and, you know, as you get deeper in the tournament, the stakes are rising. Just the anxiety of the morning was the toughest part.
Yeah. In the run-up to the final table, how much time, if any, did you spend on stream on one of the feature tables?
I think day 4 or day 5 was the first time I made it to stream. I was at a side table with Chris Moneymaker, actually.
Right.
Chris and I don't know each other super well. We've probably played you know, 10 hours of poker lifetime, but I've definitely kind of held over on him. I've just had the best hand a lot. And he kind of made a reference to it on stream. You know, when I sat down, he was like, oh, great, I'm not going to win another pot. And you know, I think I had like a fairly good showing on stream, picked up some chips. And then it really wasn't until I think day seven or eight, you know, when we were down to the final 27, that I was kind of front and center on stream the whole time.
So speaking of playing on stream, I remember not so much your final table, but especially the year beforehand, people really picking apart the play, really having a debate over, you know, strategy and...
Oh, don't worry, Joe. There's a hand from this final table we're going to come to in a moment, which we are going to pick over, but carry
on. Okay, good. But how do you feel about that yourself, your play being talked about, being analyzed, being picked apart? Are you able to, do you avoid it? Do you read it and agree or disagree? How did you feel about all that?
Yeah, I didn't follow it too much. I know in the past few years, and I've always enjoyed watching the final table. I'm never one to like pick people apart. I know it's people playing for life-changing sums of money. You know, the pay jump from ninth to eighth is usually bigger than everybody's biggest score. So It's hard to just, you know, throw all the money out the window and say, I can't believe this guy, you know, bet three big blinds in this spot instead of four. What an idiot. And you have guys, you know, Chris Krupp, you know, great player. He's famous for going on and just bashing all of these guys. And Scott Sieber has done the same thing. And, you know, they're unbelievable poker players. But at the end of the day, you know, I guess I'm kind of going against what I said earlier that amateurs don't really have a chance to make it to the final table, but you don't always end up with the best of the best at this final table. So it's a lot of guys who are kind of in my position or even a little bit worse that are, you know, good to great poker players. But as soon as you throw this amount of money in there, kind of all strategy kind of goes out the window a little bit.
I mean, when I see those sorts of opinions flying around and that sort of scrutiny, not that I really have a choice in the matter, but my fantasies of making the WSOP main event final table definitely get dampened a little bit because I'm like, I'm not remotely as good as any of these people who are really getting trashed. Like, I don't know that I want to put myself through that. I almost like it almost kind of kills the dream of it a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you. I think I've always been someone, and in my entire life, not just poker, I really don't care what people think about.
Hell yeah.
What you know, especially, you know, when I played online poker, I was far and away the tightest player. You know, everyone made fun of, oh, Daniel's so tight. How does he play no hands? Oh, but he wins and he, you know, grinds out a nice living. And, you know, I think I had the advantage of playing on a handful of live streams before this where I had made some very unorthodox plays that had all worked out that, you know, if those plays don't work out, I'm looked at as this idiot, like, you know, at a WPT final table where I call it all off with bottom pair and I, you know, I happen to be right. But even if I'm wrong in that spot, I don't care what the people are going to say. You know, at the end of the day, I'm the one making the decisions.
Yeah.
And oh, I wish I had that.
One thing the critics need to remember, again, as we were talking about, this is day 10. You know, it's very difficult to be at your best and be playing your absolute A game after 10 long days of poker. Now, I do want to talk about the final day, the second half of the final table, Daniel, because there were three things that really shocked everyone. The first is that it was so short, right? Because you guys were really deep. Everyone was expecting this to be like 10 hours of action, maybe like, you know, 5 hours of three-handed and then another 5 hours of heads up. It was super short. I guess that was as much of a surprise to you as it was to everyone watching.
Definitely. You know, I had a ton of friends and family come out that knew very little about poker. My current fiance at the time knew very little. Her whole family couldn't tell you, you know, how many cards were in the deck. So we kind of prefaced them by saying, we're going to be standing around for probably 10 to 20 hours over the next 2 days. You're not going to be able to see very much. And I'll kind of tell you when to cheer. For it to kind of go the way it did where, you know, big hands kind of clashed and the big stack just won every all in, you know, it was kind of a relief. I didn't want to be in there battling for 10 straight hours every day.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was kind of exhausted.
Of course. I'm sure you were very grateful it went the way it did, not just the timing, but the actual result as well. So the second thing that shocked everyone, and this is, I guess, the controversial hand of the final table, it's Adam Walton's shove with eights, 80 big blinds pre-flop. I mean, obviously, you were the beneficiary of that, but Do you think that was a case of fatigue, impatience? Do you think the hand was played correctly or overplayed?
You know, I think what's interesting is if this had happened in, you know, a $1,500 tournament earlier in the World Series that wasn't the main event, no one would bat an eye. I mean, right. Three-handed poker with very aggressive players. And, like, yes, we happen to be 80 big blinds effective. Yes, it was on a $2 million pay jump. And, you know, maybe it was a giant ICM punt by him. I think I listened to another podcast where some people a lot smarter than me broke down the hand and they said, you know, it's totally justifiable what he did. So at the end of the day, you know, I don't think he made a giant mistake. I think the only mistake he might have made is thinking that, you know, maybe I was a little crazier than I was. I played very straightforward the entire tournament. You know, I'm sure most of my rail when I put in the three bet was pretty sure I had a big hand. And if you watch it back, I just kind of never got out of line.
He should have known you're the tightest player online. Come on.
Very true.
The final shock to everyone, and I know that the World Series of Poker does not officially endorse or negotiate deals for players, but we know that deals get done behind the scenes. When the payout structure for this tournament was published, everyone derided it, and the jumps in prize money were ludicrous when you consider the variance, especially when you get shorthanded. Everyone was 100% sure that there were going to be negotiations, 100% sure there was going to be a deal, but you played for it all. You got the 12.1, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when we got down to three-handed, you know, I've been in some positions at World Series events before where I wanted to chop, and because they don't facilitate, it makes it very difficult. You know, right. I've had some lawyers draft up quick documents that a few wow. people signed, and, you know, we chopped an event kind of on the fly. But when you're talking about this amount of money and when you don't have Americans involved, it starts to become kind of difficult. So there was never even a thought of a chop until we got three-handed. After the first day of the final table finished, the three of us kind of got together. We said, you know, let's enjoy this for the night. And we're going to have 3 hours in the morning to figure out if we want to do anything. So that was kind of the plan. I was open to making a deal. I think it's very silly to play for that amount of money unless you are already stupidly wealthy. So waking up in the morning, Stephen Jones and I were actually, you know, kind of ready to go. And Adam was AWOL. Stephen and I were both kind of chatting, like, you know, we want to potentially get a deal done. I think I had asked for a little bit extra over ICM because I felt like I had an edge. I think both of them felt like I had a bit of an edge. And Adam just was kind of late to the discussion. And by the time he got in, we couldn't really come to an agreement.
Wow.
So it kind of just, anything that could have happened kind of fell apart. I, you know, I had a couple other outside investors reach out to me and offer to buy a piece. And, you know, I did end up hedging a little bit just because I still felt like it was way too much money to play for. But, you know, it is kind of crazy that this biggest tournament of all time didn't get chopped.
That's wild that a line at Starbucks got you like a couple extra $1 million.
Not bad.
Oh, I mean, I guess it's hard for you to be objective about it, Daniel, as the beneficiary of that $12.1 million, just $100,000 more than Jamie Gold first prize. But when you looked at it, did you think, hold on, this is a bit whack?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when the payouts were released. I think it was, you know, right when the bubble burst or so on day three or day four. I think Josh Arie was the one that put out a tweet like, you know, there's only one person that's going to enjoy this. And, you know, obviously, as being the benefactor, that person is me. But no, I do agree. It should be a lot flatter. I mean, the thing that pains me the most is, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this Jack's hand at some point, but with 14 left, I hit a two-outer on a good friend of mine from back home, and he loses $4 million in equity in that hand. Yeah. So the fact that you can play, you know, 8 full days of poker, cash for $400,000, and I play 8 more hours of poker, and I get $12 million, something seems wrong about that. But, you know, I guess that's how this tournament works.
I wasn't going to bring up the Jack's hand for the simple reason, Daniel, is that I think far too much gets made of the hand where someone got lucky. And I would like someone to point me in the direction of a player who won a tournament without getting extremely lucky at one point. Sometimes it's not captured on stream, right? Sometimes they're not at the feature table. Sometimes the cameras aren't there. But no one, And we all have to be honest, none of us have ever had success in poker without getting a little bit lucky. You can only control so much.
For sure. You know, everyone will talk about that hand forever. And every single time I've been in a poker room since, or someone has been dealt pocket jack since, it's like, you know, I feel every eyeball in the room move to me. And it's like, oh, that's his hand now. You know, I actually busted the Tournament of Champions yesterday, 4-bet shoving jacks, and everyone just has a, you know, good laugh the whole time. But you're right. You know, no one is going to win, especially this tournament, without doing something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got yourself a lifetime of comments and no one ever feeling bad for you in any situation ever again. You seem like you can deal with it fine. Speaking of getting lucky, talk to me about your affiliation with Team Lucky. I mean, you seem like way too much of a good boy for that group. Not that they're bad boys, but they're a little edgy. They're about as edgy as it gets without being actual villains in the poker world. Are you there for like good PR for them?
Yeah, I think a little bit. And I just realized I have the, you know, the Team Lucky hat on right now. I think Lance went on ChatGPT and had them make us a logo. But yeah, you know, me and Sean Deeb, Josh Arie, Matt Glance, we've been good friends for a long time. I've known Josh in Atlanta for about 15 years. Sean's going to be the best man at my wedding.
Oh, Glance, wow. And I've
been really close for a long time. And at the start of COVID, we started playing Fortnite together a lot, every single day. You know, we couldn't gamble on poker. We couldn't travel and, you know, play tournaments. So Fortnite was kind of our outlet to hang out, play. I mean, we were playing hours a day. It was, you know, just hanging out with your buds. And it just kind of evolved. Like, you know, those are probably my three closest friends in the world at this point, you know. And, you know, to your point, yeah, the three of them are definitely more polarizing. You know, I kind of go along the flow. Everyone seemed to be so happy for me when I won the main event. I think all three of them would definitely have some enemies. But it's fun, you know. I think they have dreams of turning this into some kind of giant brand. I don't know how possible that is. You know, I'm happy to go along for the ride and just, you know, have something cool that I'm doing with some friends.
A modern day Hendon mob. So I guess what that leads me to is, where do you stand this year, poker wise? How much World Series will you be playing? Are you in the 25K fantasy? What's on the agenda?
Yeah, we're headed out to Vegas in about a week. Got a few more tournaments here in LA, and then just going to take a few days and relax before the series. You know, for the past 15 years, I've always had a plan, and it's been, let's go as hard as possible, whether I'm playing cash or playing tournaments. The past few years, I've kind of been in the player of the year chase. But this year is very different. I have very little plan. Kind of like I said at the beginning, my focus is more back home, more on, you know, RF Poker and my company, more on playing golf. But the World Series has been part of my life for so long, it's not like I'm going to skip it. I'll definitely be there for the first week to play the Champions Reunion Tournament. There's a few mixed game tournaments I enjoy. I unfortunately have a golf trip during the 50K Poker Players Championship, which is my favorite tournament, but this is just kind of how I'm going to do things now. It's, you know, poker is never going to take precedent when there's something else. I'll be back at the end to defend the main event, but, you know, Team Lucky keeps joking, you know, Dan's over under in tournaments is, you know, 1.5. And as soon as he busts the first tournament, it might go down to 0.5. But yeah, it'll be a light summer for me.
That really feels like the dream to me, is just to be able to pick and choose and just play for fun ish. You know, at that point, and not because you're obligated to do it. I'm so glad you brought up the RF project, because I am dying to talk to you about this. I saw this, you tweeted about this a couple of months ago, and I think this is cooler than the main event win, what you guys are working on. Explain it to me as if I don't know what's going on, because I think our audience is going to dig it.
For sure. You know, I've been in poker for 20 years. I've seen poker evolve from, you know, this like backroom game in a smoky filled room to like really become this professional sport. But it's also kind of, you know, as we've talked about before, it's kind of become very pro heavy. It's pushed the recreationals away. And it's also, gambling is kind of part of poker. Like, I don't think any of us can imagine poker without gambling. And we've kind of tried to reverse all of that. So the whole idea of this company, and it's evolved over time, but what we've kind of settled on is to try to build basically the Topgolf of poker. If you have a group of players, just a group of friends that want to go out for a night and socialize and have good food and have good drinks, you know, 10 years ago, you would go to a bar or you would go to a restaurant. And now everyone, you need an experience now. So I think you see the rise of all of these competitive socializing places, as they're called.
And yes,
every single sport under the sun has been taken. You know, you have golf, you have pickleball and axe throwing and whatnot.
There's other ones I've been to. I've been to darts places now that just automatically keep score for you. Shuffleboard, where you stand on one end of the table and there's you know, there's a camera overhead, and it's stuff I enjoy. So you're working on a poker version of this.
Exactly. So that is it in a nutshell. You know, it kind of started as a way to capture a bunch of data in live poker. It was almost like a poker tracker for live poker. So all of our tables have RFID technology in the chips, in the cards. So you get the experience of playing basically at the World Series final table. Every single hand we play is streamed. All the data is captured. We kind of progressed from the poker tracker model to the stream model. So a lot of the biggest streams in the country now use our software, really enjoy how seamless it is. But even from there, it's like, okay, if there's 500 card rooms in the world and we sell them all a table, that's kind of a dead end as soon as everyone has a table. So now that we've moved on to this Topgolf model, we feel like, you know, this is a way to get every person in the world potentially exposed to poker. You know, right now you only have people that, you know, kind of are okay with gambling, are okay being in a room with, you know, 95% men for long hours. So it's kind of a way to open the door for everyone to get their foot in the door and try out poker in kind of a risk-free and more fun way.
A couple of follow-up questions. Now, when you go to Topgolf or you go to this, you know, to one of these darts places, they have variations of what you're used to, right? When you're playing Top Golf, you're not really playing golf. You're playing like you're playing war. Or you're playing the Angry Birds they have now.
Yep.
Do you have variations of poker, like little mini games that aren't quite Hold'em that we're used to?
Yeah, and that's kind of been my biggest role with RF in the past year or so. You know, I do write software and I've done that for a living in the past. But, you know, a lot of the guys I work with are much more proficient at that than me. So while I do help them with that and help them with partnerships in poker, I've always enjoyed creating games. You know, even in poker, I've created a couple games that at one point were very popular and they've kind of died out a little bit since. but yeah, like kind of to your point with the mini games, We've done a bunch of tests where we had people come in and play on our table with no poker experience. And you get, you know, nine people sitting around a table and maybe they don't even know each other. Poker is a tough game to learn.
That's true.
You know, and if people are paying for time and really only going to hang out at a place for 2 hours, you can't really afford to have people spend an hour learning the game and then an hour holding bad hands. So how do we turn poker from this? You know, it's still an intellectual battle. You know, that's something we don't want to get rid of. We want it to be a place where you are competing. You do want to, like, prove you are the smartest or are the best. But we had to make it more fun for people. So we've done things where we've completely gotten rid of pre-flop betting. You know, bomb pots give everyone plays every single hand. You know, you don't sit there for 2 hours and just get dealt out. That wouldn't be fun. Any addition you can think of to make Hold'em more interesting, we've tried and we've tested these, and we have variants where someone's cards are exposed pre-flop and it's just up on a TV screen that someone has the ace jack. And if that person wins the hand, they're going to get a bonus. We have games where the second best hand wins at showdown and just anything to make poker a little bit different. And, you know, for the people that want to come in and play a normal poker game, that's, of course, an option. You know, that's kind of what this started as, to build that great poker experience. But for everybody else that finds poker a little bit intimidating, it's just a fun way to compete. And then with the addition of all of the, you know, technology enabled, people can get better at poker because everything is streamed. People can share all of their content. I mean, we've had so many people come in and play, you know, they play a hand, they bluff out their best friend, and they're able to just post that clip to Instagram, you know, an hour later. And it's really a game changer in getting poker from just gamblers, just people who enjoy that aspect, to anybody who likes socializing.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great. I think it's a great way to introduce people to the game, that you can just bring them and have them play at this table, and they don't have to worry about, am I going to mess something up? Am I going to put the blinds out wrong? Am I going to act out of turn? You know, this sort of thing. And it's digestible in little bites. So I guess how many years away are we from me being able to walk into your
top
RF
poker
arcade? Yeah, top pair.
For sure. You know, it's funny that you like mentioned the name. It's something we've been going back and forth on so much recently. And, you know, I've learned so much about trademarking and branding. And, you know, we have these really cool ideas that we don't want it to be too nerdy. You know, we kind of started with game theory, and that, you know, all of us who were poker players, we loved this name. And then we run it by some focus groups of people that don't play poker. And they're like, I'm never going to a place called game theory. Like, I want to go out and have some drinks. but, you know, I think we will find something that kind of brings it all together. And we're hoping to have a location open. The first location is going to be in Atlanta and should be open early next year.
So. Wow, dude, that's so exciting.
Fantastic stuff. Well, obviously, we wish you every success with that, Daniel. And good luck defending your title at this summer's World Series of Poker.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm looking forward to it. You know, for a lot of the past year, I have played very little poker and I haven't looked forward to it too much. But I definitely am looking forward to saying shuffle up and deal and getting the cards in the air.
Nice. Good to meet you.
Absolutely. You too.
So we are into the final week of the 2024 Spring Championship of Online Poker. Main event Sunday is almost upon us. Three buy-in tiers as usual, and live cards up coverage of the 10K No Limit Hold'em main event next week, Monday to Wednesday, plus the final table of the 25K Super High Roller. But what's happened in the last 7 days? Not posing that question to Joe. Obviously, it's time to converse with our Scoop correspondent. He's got the looks, he's got the brains, he's Howard Swains. Howard, welcome again.
Hello, how you doing?
I assume we're going to start with my 191st place finish in the Sunday Million.
Oh, that's pretty good, actually. Shit, nice job.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed, but yeah, congratulations.
Thank you, Howard. 3 for 3, 100% in cashes. Okay, seriously, because we are only now a few days out from the conclusion, let's go with the latest series stats.
Yes, okay, no problem. Right, so we've had 288 tournaments completed now, and through those there have been 836,000 entries. Prize pools are up to $56.45 million, and winners have taken from that $8.58 million. So, as always, yeah, big numbers getting towards the end, and so, yeah, they're just getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and when the main events run this Sunday and those prize pools are added to that total, it's going to smash the $75 million guarantee, right?
Oh, without question. Yeah, there's absolutely no chance it can't. We've got, don't forget, we've got all the phase events that those prizes haven't gone on there yet. We've got, yeah, and then the main event will just take it like way well past that.
Okay, now we talked about double winners last time. We're now looking at a triple champ.
We are now looking at two triple champs.
Oh,
yeah, we've got two triples for now, but we're going to focus first on one, because Kelvin Kerber, now he did one of these very, very rare scoop achievements. He won not only two tournaments in one night, two tournaments from the same event in one night.
Wow.
He took the medium and the high in the fixed limit hold'em. It's very, very rare. Coincidentally, the player who first did that was Terence Chan, unassigned. He did it in the first year of scoop. And actually, he came second in the fixed limit hold'em to Kelvin Kerber in one of those events. So he's still playing that. But yeah, so Bruno Volkmann did it last year. But other than that, I think it's only Terence Chan that's done it. So yeah. And then Kerber went on to win a third title. So he's that brings his career total to 8. And he was the first player to land 3 tournaments in this series.
Howard, there's never been a low, medium, high winner
That is correct. There, that has never happened yet. I mean, that will. I mean, that's the full scoop jackpot, there, isn't it? I mean, you don't get that, once that happens, the alarm's going to ring, I think.
I know that that's something you're really excited about. It's almost like when we were waiting for the first double winner on the EPT. It's that kind of like achievement unlocked. I can write a great story about this. I do feel that if that were to happen, you do kind of deserve something special as a prize, right? I know you get three trophies, but it almost feels like there should be something extra if you can somehow win the same event in all three buy-ins.
It should be like one of those things out of Resident Evil, like where you can take all three trophies and put them into one super trophy and they lock in, and like a Voltron of scoop trophies. I'll run it past the ops guys.
Yeah. I just feel as though that would be an amazing achievement. And I really think it's so, so unlikely that I'm not sure ever even going to see it. But perhaps we will if we go to scoop, I don't know, scoop 50 or something like that.
Okay, so Kelvin Kerber, triple champ number one. Who's the other?
The other triple champ was Narcis Nedelcu, Narcissus 90, Romanian player. So he has won the 4 Max PKO High, the 1K Turbo, and then a 2K No Limit 08. So in his career, that's titles 3, 4, and 5. So, he is the second triple champion.
You're of Romania.
I'm guessing at this point in the series, with just 1 week to go, there are now so many double champs that you can't name them all.
Yeah, I mean, there are 13 double champs, but we do know a lot about a lot of them. So I'll run through the ones we know the best of. Okay?
Sure.
So Perry Mason, Jerry O'Dean, he's got 7 overall. He's got a $33 buy-in Hold'em event and a 109 Raz event. Pro Beers, Andras Nemeth, he's now got 7 for his career. Andreas Berggren, who plays as Mr. Andrew, he won the Sunday warm-up and the 6K PKO. So that's titles 4 and 5 for him. Ship It, FTW 911 from Sweden, won titles on consecutive nights, 530 deep stacks, and the 215 Super Tuesday. That was actually a high and a low event. Yuri, nerd guy, he won 2 in one night, so he won 2 titles last year as well. He's got the Badugi and the PLO8 this time. So just, you know, that sounds like a lot, but there were actually 25 double champions last year and 5 triple champions. So we're almost certainly going to see a few more this last week if we're going to catch up to what we had last time.
Yeah, well, staying with the story of players whose names we recognize, a couple of winners I want to focus on. Benny and Pads, because we were talking about Benny Glaser last week. It was just a matter of time, right? And all it took was a week, and boom, he shipped his first title of the series.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I've got to say, by his standards, I think this has probably been a little bit underwhelming for Benny, just because he's so great at this.
Yeah.
But he did get his customary title. He won the $55 buy-in No Limit Hold'em Turbo for $20K. So he usually wins the mixed games, as we know, but this one was in Hold'em. The interesting thing about Benny, apart from just being so good, he's so consistently good. So he's won at least one title per year since 2018 and 3 last time. That puts him back to the top of the all-time list, by the way, on 11 scoop wins. So yeah, good. Benny's just, you know, phenomenal, isn't he? And there he is. He got his win eventually.
One of my highlights of this series so far was seeing Patrick Leonard retract his criticism of the mystery bounty format when he won a mystery bounty.
Yeah, good for Pads. I mean, he's usually willing to hold his hands up when he gets things wrong, or he makes a comment.
I mean, in his mind, he didn't get it wrong. He just happened to have some poor timing.
Yeah, I suppose it was inevitable. He sort of jinxed himself into the wind, didn't he? But yeah, I mean, good for him. Like, he's got 8 career scoops now. So it was his first from this year, but he's been at numerous finals again, so don't rule another one out for him as well. He's a very good player, obviously, too.
And one other notable winner we need to talk about, a former super fan is now a scoop champion.
Wait, a real super fan, or like one of the times we had like a professional poker player on?
No, real normal average person.
Hell yeah. Who?
Yeah, he described himself as an average Joe. He's very keen to sort of like fly the flag for the average Joe. So his name is Citruck 888. His flag is Japan, but he's actually from New Zealand originally. Now lives in Japan. He won a 6 Max PKO. So he's here. He was on your podcast. He challenged you, Joe, on Battlefield Earth movie. Do you remember that?
Oh, sure, of course I do.
Okay, so he says he's a recreational player. This is his biggest win. He's totally stoked to win it, and he just wants to be mentioned on the podcast again. So he's like a very, very happy. Yeah, good for him. Sitruck 888, congratulations. Yeah, the
congrats.
biggest win of his career.
Hell yeah.
So, player of the series, where are things with that?
Yeah, well, this is a very familiar story. It looks like last year. So, fell first, remember?
Yeah.
Fell first, reigning player of the year champion, player of the series. He is top still. He's got 1,845 points. Then it's Renan Brushy, Internet 9-3. He's on 1,825, so only 20 points between those two. Then we've got Pads, another perennial challenger there. Then we've got Denis Strebkov, to stop me if you've heard this before. And then we've got Perry Mason. So, Jerry Odine. So it's, Fell first, then Brushy, Leonard, Strebkov, and Jerry Odine. Pads is leading in the high, and Brushy's just behind in that title as well.
I feel like we haven't heard any team pro names mentioned since Lex last week.
I think there may be a reason for that, Joe.
Is it bad? Yeah.
I mean, Dave, there's been a lot of deep runs across the board for all of them. They've all been going deep. The closest actually was on Wednesday night when Tonka came second. So he was in the high buying horse. He came second to Sandman 201 from Canada. Sandman, that's actually his third title. Parker Talbot still doesn't have a scoop title, but he came second. But he did have a great night in the old league, because I know we're going to come on to that, but here two of his players got two wins each. So Tonka had a good night for other reasons.
So how are things in the league? Because last time we checked in, it was looking like a two-horse race really between Team Lex and Team Spraggy.
Still Lex leading by quite a way. He's got 11,000 points. Spraggy's got 9,000 points. But Tonka, so last night, we're recording on Thursday, but it was Wednesday night. Tonka had a second place for him. Yuri Nerd Guy 1-2 and Ship It FTW 910. They both won 2. So that was like 4 titles for Team Tonka plus his own second place. So he's coming up. Finton, I'm afraid, is a long way back. But,
Who's on Finton's team?
That is not my fault. I did my bit. Drafting people who can't play scoop or people who are at Triton was not a solid strategy.
Look, I like that Finton went he took the road less traveled.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Before you go, Howard, just want to flag that there are $109 mega satellites awarding tickets to the medium and high scoop main events. Those are running 3 times per day on Friday and Saturday. And as there are 109 buying, you can use PowerPath Step 4 tickets. You can use Bron Power Passes to play those tournaments. And of course, we are streaming Monday to Wednesday of next week, the 27th to the 29th, live at 6 p.m. UK time. And Howard, you will be a part of our live coverage on the PokerStars Twitch channel.
Nice. I will be. I will speak to you then. Yeah, have a good weekend.
Time to welcome this week's superfan to the podcast, Mickey Heisen. Hello.
Hello there. Hi.
Hey, Mickey. You so fine. What's going on, my friend?
I'm doing fine, yeah. It's been a relaxing day, so it's great to be here. Having fun.
Oh.
You do sound very relaxed. Dare I say it, you do sound very Dutch.
Thank you. Yeah, it is true. Yeah.
I have to know, what's a relaxing day like?
It's just... You don't do much, really. We're not really good at relaxing, but when we do, we just do nothing.
Okay. Well, I guess there's not much to describe there. When you're not doing nothing, Mickey, what do you do?
Currently wrapping up a study to become a system administrator. I sing. I play games. I play poker.
Whoa. We'll get to the poker in a moment. Tell us about the singing. Is this more than just karaoke?
Yeah, there's more to it. I'm in a quartet, a 4-part harmony quartet barbershop, and we compete across Europe and see if we can beat the rest.
That's so cool. Well, that explains your choice of specialist subject. I just thought that this was a random interest of yours, but actually you are a barbershop quartet singer.
Yep, that's right.
Nice.
A barbershop quartetist, a barbershop quartetter. A barbershop quarter? How? What's the? I mean, maybe this is on the quiz, but
No, it's just you would call yourself a barbershop singer.
Not singer,
necessarily
okay.
A quartet, yeah.
And I guess, I mean, again, I don't want to get too far into the weeds as far as what will be on this quiz, but how does barbershop, I assume, is like started as an American thing. How, you know, what's it like in Europe? What's the barbershop quartet scene like?
It's not as good as the American side, but we're getting there. You know, it's a culture that we've taken from a bunch of Americans and embraced as our own. So we're building towards something really good, and it's very exciting to see what we can bring.
It's so cute because other than poker, I can't think of any positive contributions America has made to Europe. So I'm glad that there's something that can be looked upon as like, what a sweet activity.
Yeah, it's fun.
So, Mickey, you said one of your other interests is poker, which makes sense, seeing as you've applied to come on as a guest on a poker-themed podcast. Sadly, of course, being in the Netherlands, we cannot give you a real money prize, so you'll have to play for the enhanced merch pack. Do you get to play much poker live? If you do play online, please don't mention where you play.
No, it's sometimes it's online, but it's... yeah, sometimes live as well.
I'm glad. Well, at least we can give you something to wear while you're playing live poker. That much we can do. I have no idea what awaits us. Patrick has compiled a 10-question quiz. Obviously, Mickey, as our guest, as our super fan, you get to go first. So please give me a number between 1 and 10.
Let's start from the bottom. Let's start with 1.
Start with number 1. What is the name of the biggest organization that promotes barbershop singing in the United States of America?
That's Barbershop Harmony Society, BHS.
It is. Not British Home Stores, a different type of BHS. That gives you 2 points. And Joe, you're up.
I like this one because there's absolutely no pressure on me whatsoever. Like, when I didn't know how to calculate pot odds 2 weeks ago, that was kind of embarrassing. I'm not worried about this one. So, you know what? Give me, you know what number I've never chosen right away? 4.
Never chosen number 4. Okay. Can you name the 4 voices in a barbershop quartet?
Not off the top of my head, no, but I'll take some choices.
Okay. Listen carefully. I'm going to do this once.
It's going to be a lot. I know.
Is it?
Yeah.
Lead, melody, treble, baritone. Lead, bass, treble, octave. Lead, bass, tenor, baritone. Or bass, chord, tenor, a cappella.
I'm going to eliminate choice number 4. Can you read number 1?
I said I would only read them once.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter. You'll read them as many times as I need them.
Lead, melody, treble, baritone.
I'm going to go with number 1.
It was number 3. And we come to your next question, Mickey. 2, 3, 5, 6. Any number up to 10.
Let's do lucky number 7.
Always coming. The Ragtime Gals and Justin Timberlake perform a barbershop version of Sexy Back with which US talk show host?
Ooh, I like some choices there.
Is it Jimmy Fallon, Ellen DeGeneres, Conan O'Brien, or Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah, it's still going to be a complete guess. Jimmy Kimmel?
It was the other Jimmy Fallon. So Fallon's, you still have a 2-0 lead as we go into the... Well, Joe's second question, sorry. Anything other than 1, 4, or 7, Joe?
2, please.
Approximately how many registered barbershop singers are there in the continent of North America?
Okay, I... would be really tough to do without the choices here, so...
Okay, these are the choices. 20,000, 50,000, 100,000, or 300,000?
100,000.
Do you happen to know the answer, Mickey?
I thought it was about 20,000.
It is 20,000, but you don't get a point. You can get points on your next question, though. 3, 5, 6, 8, 9, or 10.
Let's go number 10.
Number 10. The word phrase a cappella is originated from which country?
Ooh. behind the choices.
Okay. Does it come from France, Italy, Spain, or Germany?
It's got to be Spain.
No, it's Italy. And here is a hashtag fun fact. It literally translates as in chapel style.
Huh.
Here we go.
And Joe, you're up. 3, 5, 6, 8, or 9?
Let's go with 3. Running bad at questions so far.
Okay. What was the first a cappella song to reach number one in the UK charts?
Go ahead.
Was it Only You by the Flying Pickets, Don't Worry, Be Happy, Careless Whisper, Somebody That I Used to Know?
Only You.
It was Only You, the Flying Pickets cover version of that Yazoo track. And it's 2-1, the score, as we go into the penultimate round. And it's 5, 6, 8, or 9 for you, Mickey.
Let's go number 5.
Traditionally, what were all female barbershop quartets known as?
Sweet Adelines.
Would you like the multiple choice options?
Yeah, I would in that case, yeah.
Okay, were they known as...
Would you put it that way?
For sure.
Were they known as Adeline Quartets, Beauty Shop Quartets, Harmony Quartets, or Pink Quartets?
Well, I said Sweet Adeline, so Adeline Quartets?
No, they were known as Beauty Shop Quartets, apparently. Ooh. I just go with what I'm told. Joe, 6, 8, or 9?
All right, time for 9.
Lucky number. What hats are traditional to barbershop quartets?
I don't know if they have a specific name or not. I guess I'll take the choices.
Fedoras, bowlers, straw hats, or fez hats?
Straw hats.
Straw
Damn
hats.
It, I could have got that one without the choices.
Tied game going into the final round. 2 points each. This could be a critical decision, Mickey. Do you want to take 6 or 8?
I like the number 8.
Okay. What is the name of the barbershop quartet that performs at Disneyland?
Oh, God. Oof. Well.
You can take the options, remember?
Yeah, we need the options.
Okay. Is it the Magic Quartet, Waltz Walnuts, the Dapper Dans, or the Anaheim All-Stars?
The Dapper Dans.
It is the Dapper Dans for a point. So, Joe, if you can get this next question right with the options, you tie the game. If you get it without the options, you win.
And is the question how many people are in a barbershop quartet? Because that hasn't been asked yet. And it's 4. No choices. Thank you. Final answer.
I do think this is achievable, even without having a broad knowledge of barbershop singing. At the USA's annual barbershop singing competition, groups are judged on 3 criteria: musicality, singing, and what other thing?
I'm just thinking out loud here. I'm not going
to
answer.
Sure. Remember, you can take the options to tie the game.
Yeah, I'm going to take the options, but I'm just thinking here that maybe it's like creativity or like a challenge or, you know, the difficulty of the song. So let's see what the options are.
Okay. Is it musicality, singing, and performance, costume, facial expression, aura?
Wow. I feel like what's the first choice again?
Performance.
Performance, if musicality, and the other two are musicality and what?
Singing.
Isn't that all performance? That feels weird to me. Okay, so what's the second choice?
Costume.
Third choice is what?
Facial expressions.
And the last choice is?
Aura.
Facial expressions.
I know you thought it sounded weird, but performance was the actual answer. So by a 1-point margin, Mickey, you are a winner. Congratulations. That
nice
was
one,
a
Mickey.
Lot closer than I think any of us expected it to be. But that was also a very random luck of the draw type quiz.
It was, yeah. I like it.
Well, Mickey, I think it's really cool that you have like an off-the-beaten-path hobby.
I
think it's neat that people still do stuff like that. And I hope you get a lot of enjoyment from it.
Yeah, it was fun to do something not typically, discussed or quiz.
Yeah,
I don't disagree. I, for one, enjoyed it. And as a winner, of course, we are going to give you the enhanced Poke It in the Ears merch pack. That will be winging its way to you in the Netherlands. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, my babies, we're just about out of time for this week's show. Coming up next time, James, help me wrap my head around what we've got left this season in Poker in the Ears.
Okay, I know you love the whole seasons thing. The reality is that this show doesn't ever really stop other than when it takes a summer break, and that is what is happening. So next week will be our full Scoop recap. We'll get a final update from Howard, hopefully an interview with a Scoop champion. And then we're not actually going to record any regular episodes until August, just before we go to Barcelona for the 20th anniversary of the EPT. But because there won't be any new episodes during the months of June and July, what we will do before we go our respective ways, before you do your road trip, before I go to Malaga, we will record a couple of summer specials. So these are kind of like timeless podcasts, which will have no kind of like news in them, nothing that's particularly contemporary, but we'll give you something fun to listen to whilst we're not releasing regular episodes. So we're going to do a Poker Movie Monday. We are going to look at the Steven Seagal movie Gutshot Straight, which I've discovered is in the Apple Store in the UK just called Gutshot. So it is definitely available in the UK. I assume you can get hold of it in most other places in the world. We are going to need a super fan for this show. We are going to need someone who volunteers to watch this movie and is prepared to be the super fan for this particular show. But as ever, when we pick the subject, we juice the prize pool. So there is an added incentive.
All right. Very good. I mean, there'd have to be to have to watch the Steven Seagal movie. Gross.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other episode we'll record for release in June, July is a Meet the Team Pro special. We announced the fact that Kenny Hallett has recently signed on with PokerStars. Talked about it last week, how as well as an ambassador, he's going to be working with the live events team as a consultant. So let's talk about the life of Kenny, how he balances being a player and a TD. And do you remember all those years when Kenny would do the ultimate Vegas schedule for everyone who was there?
He still does it.
He still does it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously it would be cool to talk to him and thank him for that and find out exactly what sort of work goes into something like that, because it, to this day, it's still the main resource people use when planning out their summer in Vegas.
Yes. Also, I need to understand how he has achieved this status as Spraggy's live nemesis. You know that Spraggy's online nemesis is Centaurus. Well, apparently Kenny Hallett is like the live Centaurus. Spraggy cannot win a hand against him and has been eliminated from multiple tournaments by Kenny.
Oh, poor Spraggy. All right, well, if you can't beat him, join him. So we got Kenny on the team, and Kenny's going to be on the show in just a couple of weeks.
He will be. So, yeah. You can apply to be a superfan, not just for that show, but for future episodes as well. You can comment on the show in the podcast discussion channel as well. Two dedicated channels for Poker in the Ears on the PokerStars Discord server. Link in the podcast description.
Ooh, and what we'll have to do too is in one of those episodes, we will have to recap table one of the big game on tour. We'll have to, because by the time those air, that'll be done, I think. So we'll be able to talk about what the Loose Cannon journey was.
That's a very good point. So the Kenny episode will also include our big game recap.
Perfecto. All right, my babies. That is all the time we have got for this week's show. Until next time, for James Hardigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.